Thursday, May 7th, is a day that I had regarded it as an enormous sort of hurdle, something to tense my mental muscles for and try to jump over successfully. And I think it was a success. Early, I went to the beauty parlor about 8 o'clock, but not earlier than Lyndon and Linda began their day, because they left by chopper for Andrews for a 5-state poverty tour that was to last 2 days. At 10:30, there was a meeting of the Preservation of the White House Committee in the Yellow Oval Room. Of the public members that I had appointed, Alice Brown was there and Bruce Catton, the historian. Mr. DuPont, the senior member as far as prestige, and Mr. Fosberg, who had been head of the painting committee for Mrs. Kennedy, and of the official members, Mr. Hartzog, head of the National Park Services, Dr. S.D. Ripley of the Smithsonian, Johnny Walker of the National Gallery of Art, Bill Walton of the Fine Arts Commission, Mr. West, the chief usher, that most indispensable man, and Mr. Ketchum, the curator of the White House, and there, just to hold my hand, Clark Clifford, and also to explain to us the financial situation of the White House Historical Association. I had dreaded and respected this meeting very much and had studied hard to try to learn about it and to make it go well. I began by thanking them all for serving. Told them that I'd been out to visit Mrs. Kennedy and tell her how much it would mean to everybody if she could come and join us and guide us and help us, but she had said that she could not return to the White House. And then Mr. Hartzog, as chairman, took over, explaining the executive order, a copy of which had been put in everyone's chair, that the meetings would be called by me. And then he asked Mr. DuPont to explain something of the past achievements and future hopes for this house that belongs to all of us. And then he called on Mr. Fosberg to do the same in regard to paintings. There were two important things of the day, I think. One was to show them the first panel of yellow and cream damask, from which new draperies will be made for the East Room. They had been ordered by Mrs. Kennedy early last fall, a sketch drawn by Boudin for the way they would be made, and I had taken them out to show Mrs. Kennedy when they came from the looms of Lyon, France, a week or so ago. And then the other, and to me the most important news of the day, was a new acquisition, a handsome silver coffee urn, which had belonged to the first president to occupy the White House, John Adams, engraved with the initials J.A.A. for John and Abigail Adams, which had been offered to us by Mr. and Mrs. Mark Bortman of Massachusetts. It had been in the Adams family for over 100 years, and then it had been sold to a dealer in New York, and from them, the Bortmans had acquired it. And it's a very significant moment for me when I can say to the committee that this is being offered to the White House. Mr. DuPont read us a letter which offered a rug for the state dining room, describing the one which lies there now in most scathing terms. There's no doubt that the new rug is a beauty, according to Mr. DuPont. The only trouble is, it's such an exquisite antique that it would be worn out in 2 or 3 years' time with the traffic this house gets.
And besides,
it's only about half enough big for the dining room anyway. And then we got on to the important question of having some good copies made of the present rugs, the blue room, green room, and red room, which are exquisite antiques. Savonnery, I believe, perhaps one or Bisson. They are naturally rolled back when the tourists come through. But they are on the floor for all parties, and it would really make more sense to have some very good copies that would be down nearly all the time, and then bring out of the basement the rare antiques for state dinners and for a few very select groups. So it was determined by the committee that Mr. West should get estimates and evaluations of some good copies. After about an hour and a half, including, very importantly, a discussion of the financial situation of the White House Historical Association by Clark, everybody had had his say about the business of the committee, and so the meeting came to an end, leaving me with a feeling of relative satisfaction that Mr. DuPont and Mr. Fosberg would feel fairly safe about their achievements of the last 3 years, and fairly hopeful and respectful of what might happen in the immediate future. I showed Mr. Fosberg the Winslow Homer, and I think he is as amazed as I am that it should have so precipitously dropped into our laps, so to speak. And though I believe he's a little bit disappointed that he's not going to get the one that he himself had found and chosen, he is, I believe, quite respectful of the quality of this one. Love of mine, that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. I had a quiet lunch with Alice, Liz, and Ashton, and then spent a genuine hour or so of study on my little speech for the tea this afternoon. Why, when I'm not the least bit afraid of meeting the tycoons of business, or the titans of labor, or any other sort of people, at home or abroad, should I look upon today's meetings with such trepidation? Well, at any rate, at 4 o'clock, I fared forth in my simplest and best white dress to the green room to receive them, the people of the art world. And I am greatly gratified that so many of them came, some 55, and from as far away as California, Michigan, Chicago, and St. Louis. And of course, for so many of them, their natural habitat is New York and Philadelphia. From Mrs. Kennedy's Fine Arts Committee, there was Mr. Charles Francis Adams of the Adams family, Roy Davis, lovely Phyllis Dillon, my friend Jane Engelhard, on whom I leaned considerably and who flew her plane down from New Jersey, bringing with her Anne Ford, formerly the wife of Henry Ford II, and handsome, terrifically urbane Mr. John Loeb, who had literally contributed in toto the lovely oval room, the yellow room. And I think maybe Mary Lasker came on the plane with them. I think it was the ultimate compliment that Mrs. Paul Mellon of the Fine Arts Committee could come, because teas are not her natural habitat, I gather. I think she's more at home really working in the garden or talking seriously in a much smaller group than 55. And there was Mrs. Henry Parrish, who had been for a while before Baudin, the decorator, and gentle, gnome-like David Finley, formerly of the Fine Arts Commission, and Mr. Gerald Shea, who still owns, but is graciously lending to us, for I hope a very indefinite long time, two lovely inlaid tables in the green room. And from the paintings committee, there was Susan Mary Alsop. I asked her to be sure and slip off upstairs to the third floor, and see how she liked the way we had placed the desk that she and Joe gave. And Mr. Cheever Cowden, that I didn't have much time to talk to. Mr. Lawrence Fleischman of Detroit, who I think would be one of the most enthusiastic and can-do men if we were launched on a program of acquisitions. And Mr. Fosberg and Mrs. Fosberg, I'm very happy to say, stayed on for the meeting. Mrs. Walter Halley was there, an exquisite Mrs. Bill Paley, Mrs. Fosberg's sister, and probably the most attractive man of the afternoon, Vincent Price, whom I had seen from the other side of the footlights so many times, and who now has the delightful job of selecting paintings for Sears and Roebuck, no less, that can be bought by any customer, ranging from $25 to $50,000, and the customer will have the assurance that even those in the $25 price range have what is considered by a professional art merit. It's delightful, and I hope I see him again. And there was Joe Pulitzer of the newspaper family, and a very bright and attractive woman, Mrs. Suzette Morton Zurcher. The library committee, headed by Mr. James T. Babb, was there in goodly number, and I am glad, because I wanted both a chance to thank them for what has been done and to sort of recognize the fact that their mission is still in midstream, not yet accomplished. The advisory committee was there in great number, for Mr. James Biddle, curator of the American wing of the Metropolitan, Mr. Julian Boyd, the papers of Thomas Jefferson at Princeton, and Lyman Butterfield of the Adams Papers in Boston. I enjoyed talking to him about the silver urn that is being presented to the White House, and then a whole bevy of museum curators and directors, ranging from the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Mr. Gerald Gibson, to Mr. John Graham of the Colonial Williamsburg, director of collections there. And there was a somewhat controversial Mrs. John Pierce, who had been curator at the White House when the project was first established under Mrs. Kennedy. And though Mr. DuPont himself had to leave and could not remain for the tea, the curator of the Winnetou Museum, Mr. John Sweeney, one of his chief assistants, was present. After I had met everyone in the green room, they all filed into the blue room where the gilt chairs were placed in a semicircle, and in each seat a list of the donations to the White House collection since December the 1st, 1962. I understand their last tea had been in November of 62, so everything listed hereon was something that presumably they may not have seen and would like to become acquainted with. Last to enter, I came into the blue room, went to the little rostrum, and said my small speech. Welcome to this house to which, under the inspiration of Mrs. Kennedy, you have turned such loving hands. I wish sometimes that you could hear the remarks of your most ardent admirers, the 1 million tourists who see your handiwork each year, a number which is expected to top 2 million this year. One recent Saturday, there were 24,400 in this house in one day. You would feel rewarded indeed to hear the ohs and ahs from the girl from Sioux Falls who saved babysitting money all year to ride the school bus here. Are the approving remarks of the curator of the Louvre. Only the other day, museum directors you hear from all around the world, and they were lavish in their praise. Then I told him the story of the wife of the National Academy of Science member who had gone through and returned to say to me, "Now I feel like a citizen," and continued with something of my own situation. Since January, I have been taking my own crash course in the history and furnishings of the White House, and perhaps because you already have such a broad base of understanding, you would like to hear some of the small and amusing incidental information I've come upon. So I related a number of the little anecdotes about how Dolly Madison had ordered a washing machine her first month in the White House, and that during the Van Buren administration, the house was so badly underdrained that in all long rains, the floors of the kitchens and cellars were actually underwater, and that President Chester Arthur, who didn't like the furnishings, swept up 24 wagon loads, including much of the furniture from the east and green rooms, and auctioned it. Carpets, curtains, chandeliers, beds, sofas, chairs, pots and pans, all going under the hammer. In fact, the auction was so complete that a newspaper reported the sale of a rat trap that caught the rat that ate the suit that belonged to Mr. Lincoln. But that could never happen again. Through the years, many first ladies have put their hearts into this house, and with the arrival of Mrs. Kennedy came the devotion and taste and the exceptional organizational ability which brought you together and produced the present and permanent excellence of this house. It will never be lost again. Mrs. Kennedy asked me to give you her best wishes today, and I want you to know that the present occupants of the White House, husband and I, who live with this beauty for the time being, appreciate and enjoy your great gifts of time and talent to it, as will those who follow after us. Because it will never really be completed, I hope I can count on your continued interest and advice, and I shall certainly call on you from time to time. And then I told them about how the Committee for the Preservation of the White House this morning had accepted a distinguished new possession, a silver coffee urn purchased in the late 18th century by John Adams in England and described in his inventory for the year 1826. And finished by saying to them, "And now I want to visit with all of you, and perhaps you would like to take the list of gifts in your chair and see for yourselves how much your efforts have meant to all of this house. Perhaps you would like to look for your own special love, the paintings, the Vermeer room, the library, or just wander with me from room to room and look at everything." I think the thing that interested them most was the Manet that was the gift of the Kennedy family, Manet sur la Seine, hanging in the green room. And next, perhaps, the marble bust of Joel Barlow by Houdon. And several of the members recommended that should be moved downstairs where more people could see it, something that I think must be seriously considered in the future. I walked from room to room and from group to group with as many words of personal thanks and appreciation as I could to Mr. Shea for the tables, to Mr. Fosberg for months of his life, Jane Engelhard with delight about how much everybody had enjoyed seeing the china yesterday actually on the tables, particularly her Harrison administration dinner plates with the beautiful wheat design around the edge. And how could I possibly say enough to Mrs. Mellon? to express how I feel about the portrait of Thomas Jefferson, only I guess that whenever anybody asks me, I'm always quick to say that the two paintings I like best are the Thomas Jefferson and the Benjamin Franklin. Every foot of the way, I felt very much supported by Mary Lasker's smiling face, by Alice Brown, and in a different but significant way, by Jane Englehart. About six, all the guests drifted away. And then Alice and I had a postmortem, a farewell drink, and she left, with me ready for an early massage and an early bed, and remembering the advice of Thomas Jefferson to his grandson, that we spend a lot of time worrying about the things that never happen, that never become problems. Because today has gone very successfully, I think. But yet, perhaps it would not have gone so successfully if I hadn't worried about it and tried real hard on it.